All right, we're rolling. I am David Tremonti, your co-host. This is Top Turtle MMA. We have a great show lined up for you today. A lot of exciting stuff to break down after a jam-packed weekend. As always, you can download us on Stitcher, iTunes, SoundCloud, TuneIn. Leave comments if you like what you hear. You can email us, topturtlemma@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, @topturtlemma. You can follow Gumby, @GumbyVreeland, V-R-E-E-L-A-N-D, that's Dutch. And anything else I got to tell them about Gumby?
I think that's it. That's all the different ways that you can get at us.
All right, awesome. And, oh, and of course, our parent website, MMA-Manifesto.com. Click on the podcast tab. You'll find all our episodes there as well.
If you're one of the people who follow MMA news, which if you're listening to us, odds are that you are, make sure you click around that site too. A lot of great content there from a lot of fun writers, myself included.
So, Gumby, how are you today?
I'm definitely doing better than Johnny Hendricks.
Ouch. First of all, we drove here in a snowstorm because we were so excited to talk about this fight.
Had to get it out today.
Different cultures have different rites of passage when you become a man, and I would say on Saturday, Wonder Boy became a man. He did what GSP could not do. He did what Robbie Lawler could not do in 10 rounds. He did what no professional MMA fighter has ever done. He knocked out Johnny Hendricks.
Yeah, and I think it was like a little bit tough to digest at first, because at first you were like, okay, Johnny Hendricks got beat. It's surprising because, you know, I had him winning. I expected him to win the whole time, expected him to wrestle, talked about last week how I expected him to win. But it's just like that awesome moment that it takes you a second to process it, but then you're like, wait a second. Yeah, Robbie Lawler took 5 rounds and narrowly beat this man in a stand-up war, largely. You know, they wrestled a little bit, but it was largely a stand-up war.
That was them fighting in a phone booth for the better part of, over 10 rounds over that 1 year.
So it was on the feet. It wasn't like Hendricks went in with a different game plan. They stood with both of those two people, and he stood with Robbie Lawler for 25 minutes. He stood with Stephen Wonderboy Thompson for, what was it?
3 minutes?
3 minutes, maybe 2.5? Yeah, I'm sure we could look up the official time, but that's, you know, not one round.
Yeah, and I know, you know, you can't apply this to, they say, MMA math. Oh, this guy beats X, so X doesn't beat Y, even though Y beat the original. I just messed up that analogy, but you get what I'm trying to say, the transitive property. I think in this case, you can actually apply it, because I don't think Robbie Lawler is going to take him down, or try to.
Yeah, I think the reason you can apply this is the reason that Hendricks and Lawler's match was so fun, is they're similar guys.
Yeah.
They both have a decent wrestling base. When they want to use it, they can use it. When they don't want to use it, they're power punchers who slug and have great cardio. So, I think they're very similar fighters, which is why they went to a very close 5-round decision. And in this case, he couldn't stand with him. So why would you think that Robbie Lawler could stand with him for a while?
I think Wonder Boy is light years ahead of most of the MMA fighters in that welterweight division when it comes to striking.
Definitely when it comes to striking. I mean, like, if we're talking top to bottom, I think there are guys who could beat Wonder Boy, Lawler included, but I think that win showed just how dangerous he is and how much better he's gotten since the Matt Brown fight.
Yeah, so it's really interesting because I was nerding out on Fight Metric, a website you and I both love, and if you take out the Matt Brown fight where Brown took him down, I want to say 5 times.
5 of 13. I remember this specifically from thinking about my breakdown.
You are
5
such
of 13.
A nerd. So 5 of 13, fine. If you take that fight out, he's never been taken down. He had a 78% takedown defense going into that fight on Saturday. Now it's at 80.
But I think that is less he is really good at defending takedowns and more that his karate stance and the way that he moves in and out is difficult to hold on to him or get a hold of him.
Right. And you saw that. Hendricks tried once. Couldn't hold him down. Right.
He couldn't get close enough to him. I mean, it was a little bit like Holly Holm, Ronda Rousey.
I thought of that too.
It wasn't necessarily that she couldn't get her down or that he couldn't get him down. It's just that they couldn't get close enough that their entry wasn't there. So, like, you know, I think that's the big piece of their takedown defense that we need to pay attention to. Not necessarily that they, like, you know, have a good sprawl or get the underhooks quick or anything like that.
Yeah. So, you know, a friend of ours, and I always like giving credit where credit's due when we read a cool piece online, but in this case it was actually someone we know, Kierick Jeunesse of MMA.com, wrote a kick-ass piece on the evolution of sport karate in MMA. and obviously brought up how Machida kind of was the first, and now Wonderboy's taking it to a new level. I'm not going to sit here and try to break down the difference. I actually read an interview a couple of years ago where Wonderboy was like, it's complicated what the difference is. It seems to me like Lyoto's a bit more of a counter-striker, kind of sits on his feet. Sits on that back foot a little bit more. I saw with Wonder Boy, he would actually go after Hendricks and try to walk him down if there was a brief second where he thought that Hendricks was going to try to come in and close the distance.
There is a lot of forward pressure there with him, too, and I think that that's kind of what makes him so fun to watch, too, is that he's like, he doesn't wait for anything to happen. He goes and makes it happen. And I love that about watching Wonder Boy. It's just shocking to me that he was able to do that.
So, I don't know. I was thinking of this, too. Tell me if I'm just kind of crazy and maybe too early to the dance to say this. But you think of some of the people who are at the top of the rankings here. Joanna, Holly, Wonder Boy Thompson. These are strikers first who learn the MMA game after their respective disciplines, Muay Thai for Joanna, boxing for Holly, and then sport karate for Wonder Boy. And they've now become real MMA fighters to the point where they can dictate where the fight is, and that's at their strength. And that's something that I don't think we saw 10 years ago from someone who maybe came as just like that Muay Thai fighter only or the karate fighter only.
Yeah, I think you probably saw it like in the Chuck Liddell era, because that's what Chuck Liddell did.
Chuck
Liddell took
karate.
His Kenpo karate. Right. He brought it to people, and he got some awesome takedown defense, and he forced people to stand up with him. But you're right. You know, like, if we go, you know, 10 years ago, you got the Mark Coleman era. That's probably a little bit more than 10 years ago, right?
Yeah, but I know what you're saying. It was that, like, wrestle box era,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now I almost just kind of wonder, is it now the people who come from the stand-up background first who learn the takedown defense, and now they're kind of going to be the standard bearer for the next couple of years?
It's possible. And if you think about some of the other champions out there, too, not that he started first with striking, because the name I'm about to drop started first with wrestling, but John Jones has that same style.
Right.
You know, and I know technically he's not a champion. I'm calling him a champion because he's the 205
champion
in my mind.
But he's a champion.
But
keep going.
Yeah. So, but he has that style, too, where, like, he could wrestle with you, but mostly he's going to stop you from wrestling and he's going to beat you on his feet.
Right.
And I think that that is coming back as, like, a dominant style. For a while, if you were an expert grappler, you were the guy getting by. You know, BJ Penn won his title. I mean, he had some good boxing in there, too, but he won his title largely by grappling. You had GSP largely had his title through grappling. You know,
Matt Hughes was a wrestling base.
You had whoever your heavyweight champion at that time was wrestling base too. You know, whether it was Randy Couture or Brock Lesnar or, you know, Cain Velasquez, when Cain Velasquez first jumped in there, all three of them wrestling base guys. So you are slowly starting to see.
And then Connor too. How'd we even forget?
Yeah, and oh, Connor's got that style, too.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely, where he keeps people away. I thought you were saying that Connor had a wrestling
No, style. Sorry.
Jesus Christ. No, yeah, but he's got that style, too, and I think that you're starting to see that style become the dominant style because those people with just an awesome double leg can't get in.
Right. Very, very interesting. So here's the other thing from the weekend. Speaking of people who couldn't get takedowns, the co-main event was Jared Rochelt versus Roy Nelson. Conventional wisdom was that Jared Rochelt would try to take Roy Nelson down, use his wrestling, which he's done for most of his wins.
Every fight.
Every
much,
fight.
Yeah.
And he got gun-shy.
Yeah, and again, I think not enough credit is being given where it's due on this one, because I think a lot of credit should be given to Roy Nelson. He had maybe the most boring fight of his career,
yes,
which is not saying much because every single time he steps into the cage, it's a fight of the night pretty much, or a knockout of the night.
He's a fun fighter.
But he finally realized, because he'd lost, you know, 4 out of 5 or 5 out of 6 or something like that, that he needed to win a fight. And if you look at his stance completely changed. He's, like, sitting down in his stance. He's, like, looking to set up his punches. And he's definitely ready for takedown defense the whole time. I think Rochelt studied film, and he came out looking at something completely different than what he thought he was going to see.
Right. I also, it was interesting, too, just we brought this up last week, that he had the boring fight on the Holly Holm Ronda Rousey card. And I kind of wondered, and we talked to him in the interview. He said he thought his striking was getting better. I kind of thought that maybe he went in with the mentality of, like, all right, they didn't like it when I just grinded out a win with my wrestling. I'm going to try to stand and trade here. But he didn't really – there was no output.
Yeah, well, I hope that wasn't his game plan going in, that I'm going to abandon my wrestling and try to box this guy with a huge knockout punch. Because that would just be – I think that's silly, and hopefully he didn't do that. But I think what happened was is that stance threw him off. And I think he became gun-shy with his hands too, because Roy Nelson feinted that shuffle that he does to throw the big overhand right. You know, if you watch any film on Roy Nelson, he shuffles his feet right before he throws that big overhand right. Almost, there's like a sort of a very soft jab out in front of it. And he did that all the time. All the time he was doing that shuffle, cocking his backhand, and just pulling it back and sitting it in the holster. And that's when Jared Rochelt was running. Because Everybody said he was running from nothing. He was running from that big overhand right and the fakes to that the whole night.
That's a good point. So what do you think as far as a next step for Jared Rochelt? He probably has to go against someone not as big a name as Roy Nelson.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I'd like Derek Lewis off the early part of the card.
Yeah, yeah.
He had a really impressive win. Somebody I think Jared Rochelt would have a fun little matchup with. Did they already fight?
Oh, actually they did,
I think.
They did already fight.
And
you're right. Jared Rochelt wrestled
the hell out of him. Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's not a good matchup then.
But I know what you're saying.
But somebody
Derek Lewis, I totally get it.
Who's coming from the lower part of the division with a really nice win, or you know, somebody middling level who's coming off a loss. There's a couple of heavyweights in there that you could probably pick. They just signed a couple of heavyweights. Maybe they'll throw the new guy who I think's coming off a fight pass to be the next heavyweight. You know, they haven't said it yet, but if you watched any of Legacy this past weekend, Cody East, the Legacy heavyweight champion, is all but signed to UFC. Maybe he is even signed.
Do you know how old he is? Is he?
I want to say he's in his late 20s. Okay. He's like 27, 28, if I'm not mistaken.
Which is young for the heavyweight division anyway.
And he's 10-2. I know they put him on that card, the Legacy card, like 6 or 7 days before it started because they heard Dana White was coming. They gave him a non-title fight, and he head-kicked knockout the guy in 40 seconds. So I'm assuming that was a setup so Dana could be watching. And, you know, you saw Dana sitting cage side. You know he was there.
Right.
You just have to imagine
and
that.
And for Roy Nelson?
I thought about this one already. I think Travis Brown would be a really fun matchup with him. Travis Brown just coming off of beating Mitrione, but not that high in the division. Somebody who Nelson could still beat, but would at least give him a really, really good fight.
That's probably, I don't have it in front of me, but out of people in the top, let's call them 8, I think that might be the one that doesn't have an opponent because they just announced that our boy Ben Rothwell is going to fight JDS in April. And then obviously Stipe is in that title mix in some regard.
Oh, you know who else you're missing there too that could be a fun matchup too? He could do a rematch with Andrei Arlovsky from their IFL days.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, and I'd watch that and kind of be upset because those are by far two of my favorite heavyweights and it would just be like cringeworthy to have to sit through that.
Yeah. We're going to talk about flyweights later in the show, but as far as other big fights on that card, really the biggest news coming out of it, which is kind of weird to say, was the Fight Pass prelim, Mickey Gall, just obliterated Mike Jackson, and then CM Punk, the former professional wrestler who's going to make his debut, came into the ring, and him and Mickey Gall had an awkward stare down. What was your take?
It wasn't even a stare down. They, like, shook hands and, like, posed for a Sears portrait studio picture.
Right.
And I was like, what the fuck is going on here? Yeah, weird. The matchup didn't play out exactly like I thought it did. Because I thought that we were going to see two pretty green fighters fighting. Gall looks pretty legitimate.
He does.
I mean, he's got some really good boxing. His grappling looked pretty sound. The way he whipped Mike Jackson from one side to the other to get the second hook in looked pretty high-level jiu-jitsu style.
I think they said he's a brown belt.
Yeah, he trains with the Miller brothers, which is no joke.
That's
so,
no joke.
You know, he's doing some good training. Jackson, you know, and he's a friend of the show. He did an interview with us. I have to say I was a little bit disappointed in it because, you know, they played him up as this, like, super striker. And the couple strikes he threw, I don't know if the bright lights got to him or what, but, like, the couple strikes he threw were pretty ugly. And Gall just outclassed him. Now, I'm really upset with everybody who I see, you know, either writing in message boards or, you know, talking on MMA shows saying that Gall is just going to obliterate CM Punk. Because I'm not even going to guess on that. I've literally never seen anything of CM Punk.
Yeah.
Other than, like, 15-minute highlight clips of him training at Rufus Sport. anybody who wants to break down that fight and tell me that they're going to break down that fight and tell me what's going to happen, I'm not listening to you ever because nobody knows. You know, he could be a fucking wizard for all we know. You know, he could be a crazy jiu-jitsu ace. You could see Ryan Hall out there, jiu-jitsu style.
That'd be incredible if CM Punk just comes out.
But we don't know.
Throwing Imanari rolls at Mickey Gall's knees.
Yeah, he's got no jiu-jitsu videos out there. He's got no wrestling videos out there. You've never seen him strike unless he's got, like, weird taped hands on and he's fighting bare knuckle against Andre the Giant. Not Andre the Giant. I'm not a wrestling fan. Sorry.
Yeah, but we get what you're saying. And no, I know what you mean. I mean, and he's also at a really good camp. So he has Ben Askren as a wrestling coach. He's training with Anthony Pettis, I assume. And Duke Rufus is a striking coach.
And he trained under, I can't remember.
Henner Gracie.
Henner Gracie, thank you. He trained under Henner Gracie. I've seen training pictures of him training with Roy Nelson. Mm-hmm. So I like know he's got good training partners, but you know, you could put me in a camp with Roy Nelson for a couple of weeks too. I'm not sure necessarily that that makes me a UFC caliber fighter.
Right. Well, yeah, I know what you're saying, though. The point being is that no one really knows what to expect from this Mickey Gall CM Punk match. So, and that's a perfect segue into the next thing I wanted to talk about, Gumby, which was they announced that Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier will rematch in April at UFC 197 with a co-headline of Demetrius Johnson defending his flyweight title against Henry Cejudo. So we're starting to get puzzle pieces filled in to the big UFC 200 show in July. We know UFC 196 is an awesome co-main event. You have Conor versus RDA for the lightweight belt, Conor coming up in weight. You have Holly Holm defending against Miesha Tate. Then you flash forward a month, and this is provided that Jon Jones' most recent driving...
Shenanigans.
He
the only way you could say it.
Got caught driving without a license. I don't even want to break it down. I'm sure he has a good lawyer that'll get him out of that. But now you have Jon Jones versus Daniel Cormier for their rematch for Jones' title in April. We do not know what's in May at 198. 198 is a missing puzzle piece. And
I'm hearing rumors that that's a heavyweight one.
So that would be like Stipe versus
I'm hearing
Verdum.
Stipe Verdum.
And that would make a lot of sense. Because I don't think... So now, let me just keep going for a second. Then 199, it was announced, was going to be Luke Rockhold versus Chris Weidman for their rematch for the middleweight title.
That's not official yet, though, right?
No, I think it is.
Is it official?
Yeah.
Because my thought process was now with this whole thing with Romero not... his second sample not positive, might he have just, by clearing his name, won a title shot?
I tend to think no, because it was an underwhelming performance against Sousa.
I said that originally. When he fought Jacare, I said that he didn't do enough to earn a title shot. But, like, it was almost set up as a number one contenders fight. He won it. We ignored him because we're pretty sure he tested positive. Then the second sample came back, cleared his name. Weird, though.
Weird stuff there. But nevertheless, let's even just say, okay, let's say they hold off on Weidman, which I don't think they do to him, and they put Romero in there, which wouldn't sell as many pay-per-views, so I'm almost positive that's not what's going to happen.
Yeah, definitely not.
And then you have 200, and you and I in our very first show, when we were awkward, bumpy, and nervous, broke down what we thought the UFC 200 headliners would be. Dana White confirmed it about a week later in an interview, saying, for him, the people he'd want on 200 are your Ronda Rousey's, your Jon Jones, your GSPs potentially, and your Conor McGregor's. Those are his four biggest pay-per-view meal tickets.
And we're sure at this point of those four, only one of them is really scratched out. Ronda says she's not fighting until November.
So now, and this is what I wanted to talk about. So you have to get through March 5th, and Conor can't have broken his hand, as you brought up, on RDA's head. But you're pretty much in line for Conor to either defend the featherweight or potentially the lightweight belt if he beats RDA for 200. And I think that would be their preference. His pay-per-view against Aldo in December got about a 1.2 million buy rate. They're going to want him. If they can't have Ronda, who's the only other star who's gotten a over 1 million buy rate in the past year, because don't forget, Jones Cormier won. It was strong. I think it was like 800,000.
But it's not Conor McGregor strong.
It's not Conor McGregor strong. So I think the top preference for 200 is McGregor. We know Rousey won't be in there. Then you're kind of left with, well, wait a minute. Now Rockhold's going to defend against Weidman in June at 199. They're saying CM Punk will be on that card as well. He is actually probably going to be a big pay-per-view draw just because of the freak show nature of it all. He brings over the crossover segment of wrestling fans. So now you know that Rockhold and CM Punk and Weidman aren't going to be in 200. So what are you really left with? I guess if Jones beat Cormier in, let's call it, under two rounds and came out healthy on April 23rd, could he defend the light heavyweight title against Rumble at 200 2 months?
He definitely
later?
Could. But he's kind of laid off the whole fight again in a couple of months, fight again in a couple of months thing.
Right.
And obviously he did that over the last year or so because he was gone. But before that, he was starting to take more and more space. Because I don't know if you remember when he was first making his run to the title, he'd fight every weekend if you let him.
Yeah,
because he beat – who did he beat that led him to the Shogun title fight?
Wasn't it Bader a month prior?
Yeah, he beat Bader. Yeah. And in the cage, they were like, oh, yeah, by the way, Machida's hurt. Or
yeah.
Could you fight Shogun in a month? And he was like, damn straight, I can fight him. And not
and
only
beat
could
him.
I fight him, I can beat the
and
hell
then,
out of him.
You're correct. So that was twice in about, you know, whatever that was, 60 days. He fought two more times that year.
Yeah, and he's not going to do that anymore, I don't think. So I don't think you're going to see John Jones on that card. But I do think you're going to see
Connor.
I think Connor's going to be on there. I think it's going to be a flyweight defense because you got the number one contender fight for lightweight. It isn't until April, right? That's UFC Fox 19, Nurmagomedov,
and
Ferguson.
You mean a featherweight. You said flyweight.
Featherweight.
Yeah, for Connor.
So I think it's going to be featherweight because the lightweights are going to be tied up. I think they're going to need recovery time.
I mean, if we get a fight out of Khabib in April and then he wins that fight,
you're never going to see him again.
Yeah, we won't see the Khabib versus Conor fight, which, by the way, Conor wants no part of for another year.
Yeah, so I think that that's
so
and that leads me to think it's featherweight.
And then a GSP
in
comeback.
A GSP Lawler match.
Yeah, I mean the rumors on the dark corners of the internet is that GSP and Connor is
that's a great ticket.
Yeah,
yeah.
And that's your UFC 200 headliner.
I will play devil's advocate here. If GSP is not really coming back, if we're getting all of this commotion for nothing, Connor versus I think should be Frankie Edgar. As
it
a headline.
Should, but is that... Well,
I think Frankie Edgar sells better than Jose Aldo. I'm going to go on record saying that now. I think Frankie Edgar coming off a knockout of Chad Mendes sells infinitely better than Jose Aldo having been knocked out in 13 seconds. Casual MMA fan, not interested in seeing him fight the guy he already knocked out in 13 seconds.
Right, and I will give you something that there is going to be something there to the trash talk they could partake in because they speak the same language.
Yep.
You're also going to really light a fire underneath the hardcore fan base with Frankie Edgar. He's obviously a fan favorite. He's been around at this point forever now.
I think it does things for hardcore fans. I think it does things for making the right pick, and I think it does things for casual fans. If GSP can't go, I still think you can put Lawler on that card, and I think you can give him Wonderboy Thompson, and I think he just made himself a sell as a co-main event.
Yeah, it'd be an awesome fight. Now, this is one other thing that I forgot to bring up. So I'm actually – it's so messed up to do. I like Tyron Woodley. I guess he was promised the next shot. But if they want to just bypass him for Wonderboy, just take my money now. Yeah. I want to see Wonderboy versus Lawler. I'm sorry, Tyron Woodley.
Give Tyron Woodley Condit. Let's watch that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they fought and Condit got injured in the second round.
So let him fight again. That's my point. Let him fight again.
Or let him fight Hendricks, which is an old college wrestling.
Yeah, but Hendricks coming off a loss, he doesn't want that, I don't think. Especially because it's a brutal loss.
Yeah.
I'd say give him Wonderboy if GSP comes back.
Give Robbie Lawler Wonderboy.
I would say give Woodley Wonderboy if GSP is coming back.
Or the number one contender.
And if he's not coming back, give Wonder. I think Wonderboy has to have the title shot. I think you have to give it to him after a performance like that.
It's too exciting. Real quick, just wrapping this up, Hendricks, what's next for him? Where do you see him going?
I mean, there's a lot of fun fights at 170 still.
I'd like to see him and Nick Diaz one day.
Yeah, he could fight Diaz. That would be fun.
Has he fought Rory? He beat Rory, I think, in a 3-round fight, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm pretty sure, but I'd watch it again.
Yeah.
I mean,
he beat Condit to get that GSP shot.
That top of the division is so muddled.
Yeah.
I mean, he could fight somebody like the loser of Demian Maia, and who's Demian Maia fighting next?
Who did they just give Demian Maia? Oh, Matt Brown.
Matt Brown. Yeah, and you could fight him in a Matt Brown rematch if Matt Brown lost. You could fight Demian Maia if Demian Maia loses.
That division has so much depth, which is why I picked it as my favorite division of all time.
There's a lot of options there, but I would definitely say, I mean, he's still right in the mix. I don't think he's all that far away from being...
Yeah,
you know, back in the title shot.
A couple
again.
Of wins, he'd be back in the title shot. He's a former champion.
Yeah.
Speaking of Johnny Hendricks, kind of a timely interview. You got to sit down with Stephen Wright, his striking coach today.
Yeah, Stephen Wright, who, if you were watching the fights on Saturday, got a little bit of airtime there, too. You got to see his face pop up. And while this started with intentions of being a breakdown of why Hendricks might have lost, there is so much information in this interview about his future training, his current training, and all kinds of really exciting stuff about the part from Team Takedown. So you're not going to want to miss this. If you're listening right now, definitely tune in to the next 15, 20 minutes.
And this interview is brought to you by New England Submission Fighting, a mixed martial arts gym in Amherst, Massachusetts. All honesty, I train there. Gumby trains there.
If you train in Western Mass and you are not training at NESF, or if you're, you know, you could be from North Connecticut because it's not that far away. You could be from Southern Vermont. It's not that far away. If you train in the Western Mass area and you're training at somewhere that's not NESF, you're doing it wrong.
Dave Roy, Kirik Janess are the coaches. Great stand-up on Tuesday and Wednesday nights, striking classes, and then the submission grappling cannot be beat in this area. No gi is the specialty, but there's also a gi class on Friday nights.
You know, we got a bunch of amateurs with amateur titles there, too. Really great place to train, and we're not just tooting our own horn here with expertise. If you don't believe us, come check it out.
All right, awesome. So if you are ever in the area, if you live in the area, come to New England Submission Fighting. It's on Route 116 in Amherst, Massachusetts, the home of the UMass Minutemen. That being said, here is Gumby's interview with Stephen Wright.
This is Daniel Gumby Vreeland here with Top Turtle MMA. I'm here with Stephen Wright, who is Johnny Hendricks' striking coach. He's going to give us a little bit of the fallout from this weekend's matchup. Stephen, I'll just get right into it. You know, tough loss this weekend. How's Hendricks holding up after the whole ordeal? He seemed kind of, obviously bummed in the cage, but how's he holding up with that aftertime?
Well, yeah, I mean, Johnny's, anybody that knows him, he's real lighthearted and he has fun and he's, you know, laughing right away. And as soon as it was over with, he was just, you know, clearly you're disappointed because, you know, we were in a tough spot, kind of where Johnny Fitch was for a really long time, where you're just trying to not lose where you are as opposed to fighting and gaining. So, you know, after we didn't get the title fight back after, you know, they said they're going to do the third one and they decided to go in a different direction. And then we fought Brown. Then we were thinking we were going to get a title shot. Then it was Woodley. Then, of course, we weren't able to, you know, like I had the complications during the weight cut there. And then all of a sudden, you know, we got another guy. So this was the third guy we were going on that wasn't moving us forward. We can only lose a spot. So we lost the spot. Clearly, he was disappointed. And you know, Johnny, you know, we beat John Fitch almost 4 years ago. So for the last 4.5 years, he's been fighting, top 10 opposition. And this is the first time that he didn't show up. You know, like it's, he didn't let the hands go. He's just watching and playing, you know, playing second, playing behind. So that's kind of what happened. And so he's disappointed, but, I mean, he was laughing and joking as soon as we got back. And they came up to him, and they're like, oh, you know, Fox needs an interview with you and that kind of stuff. And he just kind of cracked a joke about it. And you know, I mean, it's in the past. There's nothing we could do about it. They're not going to restart the fight for us. He was of good spirits considering, you know, just a little disappointed, as you can imagine.
Yeah, so you mentioned a little bit about, you know, fighting to keep your spot instead of move forward. Do you feel like there's like a harder time getting a fighter motivated to fight somebody who's lower ranked and you know is not really going to do much for you? Because, you know, he did get jacked up for those title fights all the time, and you could tell he was a little bit less, like you said, willing to throw his hands against somebody like Stephen Thompson.
Yeah, you know, as far as the execution in the fight goes, I credit Stephen Thompson for that. You know, it's just, I've been in the game for a while, and I look at it, and I look at what there's two guys in there, and you're both trying to execute offense. If we're out-executed, that's credit to the other athlete, you know, despite what events go on leading into your motivation and how will you perform and so on. In the end, Wonderboy fought great. There are some things that I look at in our training camp that we could have done to prepare Johnny better. But at the same time, when I look at what happened on that night, I just think that Wonderboy executed offense and we did not, and that was our reason for losing. And then if I look at as far as, you know, the motivation factor goes, you know, I once heard someone say that it's tough once you're champion. You know, once you're champion and you've already accomplished it, it's tough getting up and, you know, having the motivation to stay there. I would disagree. I would say it's tougher to be where Johnny and Benavidez have been, where you're just outside of a title shot. You were there before, and you're trying to get it back, but none of the fights that you're in get it back for you. So he's in that really tough area where it's like the only thing you can do is lose. You know, it's like you know, it's like, all right, we need you to take a fight during this period of time because we're going to go in a different direction Basically, if people wonder why some fights don't happen, the champions choose. So, Ronda chooses who she fights, and Robbie chooses who they fight of the contenders. That's how Conda got picked. That's how this kind of thing works. So when we were champion, they asked us. But then, of course, there weren't really any contenders, and then they asked us to do the favor to replace the Weidman and Belfort fight, and then that's how the second Robbie fight came about. So basically, I look at that, and I look at, how we were as a champion, look at how other champions conduct themselves, and I say, was it much more difficult for me to prepare for Robbie the second time, or is it much more difficult, as far as Johnny's response, is it much more difficult getting him up for fights that might not get us where we want to be? And it does have its difficulties, but in the end, you want to go out there and execute, and we didn't do it, and that's I truly believe that that's the main reason why we weren't successful.
So I want to touch on one thing you said there, too. So you said that, the UFC pretty much comes to their champions with two or three different options of, like, up their contenders. You said that they did that when Johnny was champion, and you believe that they're doing that with Robbie Lawler right now, and he's just not picking or hadn't picked Johnny Hendricks?
For sure. Well, I mean, I'll give you an example of it. When we fought Campman and George fought Condit, it seemed like it was set up so that George would fight the winner of Campman and us. Campman and Johnny. And so then when we beat Campman that night and then George won, everybody thought, okay, he's going to make, You got the guy who's, Johnny's coming off these wins, the Fitch win, the Koscheck win, and the Campman win. And now you've got George. It's all set up. And then the next thing you know, 1 week later, you hear of all the names, Sahabi mentions that he says, well, we're really looking at the Nick Diaz fight. The first thing that goes through our mind is like, Nick Diaz, because, he had been suspended and he hadn't been in the, his only win was against BJ Penn since he had come back. And then that was the fight that was made because, he could sell it. Even now, they're talking about once he's off of suspension, can Nick Diaz get a fight with Robbie Lawler? If it happens, it's because the champion chose it.
Yeah.
And we realize that, there's a reason why, Holly Holm's team, most people don't know this, but they should. Holly Holm's team asked to not fight Ronda the fight that she just won. They said that we'd like one more fight, and then UFC said, no, this is the fight that Ronda's team wants right now. So basically, the reason why a Betch Koharic gets a title fight and those kind of things come into play, the reason why Teixeira got a title fight instead of, I believe, the rematch with Gustafson, it's because the champion chooses. So when we were in that spot, they asked Johnny, we were sitting there with injury, and they asked who we wanted to fight next. And we had Matt Brown had just come off of a win right after we had won. So that was the fight that we were looking at. But because Johnny was out, they made Matt Brown and Robbie. So that's kind of how this stuff comes together.
Interesting. So that's definitely news, at least to me. I don't know about the rest of the fight world. I want to get back to the breakdown of Johnny's fight a little bit because, you said it was mostly just a lack of execution or whatever it comes. But you said there was a couple of things you could go back and change in the fight camp. What are, for instance, what is one of those things that you would have changed from the fight camp that you think would have helped the outcome go the other way?
Sure. Well, I can give them all to you. Basically, the main one is, I'm going to open, since we left Team Takedown, I've been with Johnny for 4.5 years now. Since we left Team Takedown, the one thing that we didn't have was a home gym. So every, day we were kind of going to a different gym to do our activity. So we would have to be at this gym for jiu-jitsu. This, we use Reyes Boxing Gym. We use Genesis BJJ. We use the gym in Arlington. And, we used Power Fitness at the gym kind of in the Arlington area. And I look at that, I go, man, we were like all over the place trying to, and we'd use partners who were there and so on. So the first thing in my mind is the next time we have a camp, we're going to have a home. One place like ATT, like AKA, like Jackson that you go to every day. And it's what we had when we were at Team Takedown. But, of course, once that's off the table, we had to figure out do until I opened the gym up. So that one came into play. Definitely you need to have a home gym. The second thing was we had one training partner. Well, I'll say two. James Vick had an injury, and he wasn't able to help us until, the last day of camp. But he has the same length and wiry style. And when we were but clearly he's not the karate stylist. But he gave that kind of length and the kind of look of how you could get hit by a guy that long. And then our main Abdul Al-Hassan, he's My undefeated kickboxer, and he's 4-0 in MMA, all KOs. He's very, very talented. I definitely see him as high, you know, an elite guy once we get the opportunity to fight in the UFC. But he's usually a really good training partner, and he does the best of mirroring guys. So he can, if you were to be like George St. Pierre, and you go out there and you'd be like, that's George St. Pierre. If you're like Tyrone Woodley, whoever you say, he'll watch film on him and he'll go out there and he'll be that person. But this camp, you know, he's just been, you know, just depressed with a lot of life things. And he hadn't been around the gym as much. He had been around training as much. And we only got him for 2 days. And in those 2 days, he was the only person that actually did the kicks and the look. Everybody else, they did a good job of giving us sparring bodies, because you definitely need those sparring bodies. Power Fitness did a great job of giving us somebody, because we didn't have anybody. And then when he came around, he was doing those kicks. We just didn't have him in camp enough. We also tried the thing where we were going to go down to Houston and use Sage Northcutt, you know, just to throw the length and the speed and that style. But we weren't able to put it together because of his obligations and our obligations. So as far as press goes and the extra stuff that comes with being in the UFC. So I look back at it and I go, okay, how could I have put my athlete in the best opportunity to succeed? Because we had the game plan part figured out. Like, we knew what we wanted to do to execute. And, you know, 1 minute in, you know, Johnny uses his feet to cut Wonderboy off, throws some strikes, gets into the clinch, and he gets that takedown on the cage he wasn't able to get it all the way down. But, like, the way he closed it and he cut things off, I was like, all right, it started the way I thought it was going to start. But then after Wonderboy got back up, then all of a sudden Johnny was lackadaisical in spots. Wonderboy kept playing a half step back, and Johnny was, like, step into the gap, and then Wonderboy would fill the gap with offense. Wonderboy fought great. I really look back on it and I say he executed and we did it. I truly believe in the end that's why we lost. But moving forward, there are things that as a gym we got to make sure that we have for our athletes. And one of them is a main place to train, and then the training partners to mirror what you're going to fight. And that's where, you know, we got to improve. And having a gym, of course, once my gym opens, that will definitely help that. But those are the big things that I look back on.
So you say that you're in the process of opening your own gym. Do you have a location for that, or a time frame that we can expect to see that?
Sure. I'm going to have War Room Gym is going to open in Fort Worth, kind of South Fort Worth area, kind of by TCU. And then already we are working with Chaz Scaly in his camp right now. Pat Kern's a guy I've worked with before in the past. He's been coming back around. He'll be here tomorrow. I've been working with high-level athletes for a long time, but now I'm going to have the home. And when I was at Team Takedown, it was really about Mark Lehman. You know, he kind of came from a grappling base. And the whole time I was there, I was like, you know what? I appreciate this. I understand this or whatever. But we had different philosophies and, you know, who we wanted to teach and how much. And I'll teach anybody who wants to learn. And I'll do everything in my power to help you to accomplish your dreams. And I want my gym to be a place where people can pursue that full. So it's going to be a gym that makes money like any other gym, but at 12 and 7:30, it gets serious. You know, that's when our pros come in, and I'm going to do the same thing that I've always done. Film breakdown is always really important to me. I'm going to teach above all else how to land effective offense. That's the main thing that I focus on. There are big technique guys, but I'm a big how to land offense guy. And that gym opens, and that'll be the home of Johnny Hendricks. That'll be the home of you know, as long as Chaz Kelly's around, it's going to be a home for him. And then all my up-and-coming fighters, both in the UFC and Bellator, will all be in that area. So that will be in Fort Worth, Texas, around the TCU area.
Awesome. So, you know, congratulations on that, obviously. Now, you
thank you.
You mentioned a couple of names there that are guys who you train with. You know, you mentioned two there that were training partners, James Vick, and what was the second one you said again?
Abdullah Al-Hassan, or we call him Razak, but he fought in Bellator twice, KOs. He's got KOs. He usually wins by KO in the first round.
Yep. So you got those two guys. You mentioned Pat Curran is a training partner, and you mentioned Sage Northcutt. Are any of those guys, the other two, obviously, in talks of being part of your team for, like, a long-term solution as well?
No, the Sage thing was just Sage is his dad's. His dad's his head coach. Like, his dad, they've had a great relationship. They've been doing things for a long time. They've had a lot of success. This was just an opportunity for us to go down and get someone who had that kind of look, the karate-style look. And we were going to go down to Houston to train, you know, with them, and then we were going to pick, like, a neutral gym. They were going to go to, like, a UFC gym because they usually have the cage, and we were just going to work some things for 2 days, but it didn't end up working out. I've worked with Pat Curran, you know, several times, and we helped him prepare for a title fight. He's at a place where he's trying to find what his next move is going to be. And when he comes and works with me, I am hoping that he commits to me full time, but I'll still work with him no matter what. I work with Kamaru Usman, who won the Ultimate Fighter. He is a Black Zillions guy, but not, you know, mainly, but whenever he comes, he's from Arlington. So he comes back, we usually train, you know, 4 or 5 times a year. You know, Mo Lawal is the guy who got me into the game. He's the one who really introduced me to a lot of people. Anytime I see Muhammad Lawal, I'll always train him and always train him for free because he's the guy who gave me my break. So, there are athletes that are, you know, I'm just kind of saying names. James Vick, he comes and trains with us sometimes, but he has a guy that he's been working with in our area. That for Phalanx Gym, I don't want to discredit them. So really it's just, I have a lot of young up and coming people who are just outside of the UFC area, guys who are like 8-3, one guy 6-0, a female fighter is going to be 4-2 here, like, at 115. I've got a lot of people there, and then I work with a lot of athletes. Once I have the gym, I'm hoping people are like, okay, now's the time to make the move, to join that team. Because that was the one thing that we didn't do great at when I was at Team Takedown. We didn't recruit well. We just kind of brought in training partners. So I think that that's the next step. You know, if you're going to try to be a AKA ATT, if you're trying to, I don't know if we're ever going to have their kind of migration, but I do truly believe that we can have a system of guys who know this is where you go to be successful. This guy knows the connections to get you fights in the area, and this guy can help you have success at the highest level. And that's kind of what I'm hoping to have. You know, kind of a, you know, I trained at Two Rufus for a while when I was younger, and now I'm trying to kind of do my own thing as a guy who did an internship, I almost feel, when I worked at Team Takedown. And now I'm trying to do my own thing, me and then Tony Cabello, the boxing coach from Reyes Boxing. So I'm hoping that those guys would, you know, some of the guys they named, Pat Curran and so on, who I worked with before, I'm hoping that once the gym's open, they make it full-time home.
Well, that's certainly exciting. So we're coming into the end of the interview here, and usually when I give interviewees a chance to just say something at the end, I give them a chance to plug some things. So obviously, you just plugged your new gym for a little while and told us a little bit about it. But anything else you want to tell us about that, or maybe shoot us off one of the names of the prospects before I let you go?
Sure. Mark De La Rosa is my 6-0, 125-er. He is, I truly believe he's a UFC level guy. He's like the hardest working man in the business. Montana Stewart, I do believe that she's going to be a high level UFC fighter. We started off slow because, again, she was with Team Takedown when she started. And she didn't have an amateur career, so she kind of started off nervous and she dropped the first two. But now she's stopping everybody. She's got the mentality. She's got the confidence. So definitely Mark De La Rosa, Montana Stewart. Hunter Tucker is going to be a beast. He's a guy who, he was at Jackson's for a little bit. He's now 7-3, so we're trying to get to that 8-3, 9-3 area so that we get the call up. Andrew Parker had a tough year last year. We're trying to turn things around for him. And then the main guy, one of the main guys is Abdul Al-Hassan. He really is a special talent, and he's just, if we can get his life back going and get him back in the gym, this guy is, he can be UFC champion. He is very, very talented. And no matter who's coming to gym that we've brought in from the UFC, he's had success with them all in striking, like not just a little bit of success, significant success. So those are the kind of fighters that I have moving towards the future. And, you know, we'll keep working. And I've got more, but I don't want to start running off names. but those are my athletes. And then, of course, I do this all because I had a relationship with Christ, and I just did it because I wanted to pursue people's hearts and help people pursue their dreams and then let them know about God, and it's all kind of came together. So thank you for the interview, and despite the fact that, you know, things didn't go our way, I'm always going to be open and honest. Shout out to Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, who fought a great fight as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And rattle off that name of your gym that's coming out one more time.
It's going to be called War Room.
War Room. Okay, very exciting. Yeah. Thank you very much, Stephen Wright. Excellent interview. A lot of fun to talk to.
All right, thank you.
Wow, so I thought Stephen Wright was like an open book there. I like that it wasn't really him making excuses. He gave all due credit to Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, and it earned a tremendous amount of respect from me the way he approached it. He's taken a lot of the responsibility, too.
Yeah, and I'm excited in hearing all of that because, you know, most of what he said there about changing gyms and having a home location and all that kind of stuff was news to me. You know, I know Johnny Hendricks was traveling during all of that, but the fact that they have a gym planned out in the Texas, in I believe you said the Fort Worth area, all very, very intriguing to me. And I'm going to be excited to see, you know, what kind of talent he attracts in seeing, you know, who switches over. He talked about some potential guys in there and excited to see his prospects too. It's really, really an interesting unfolding.
Yeah, I agree completely. So we have a couple of free agent updates here, Gumby. But before we do that, this free agent update is brought to you by Grappler's Toolbox.
Grappler's Toolbox, a great place to get all of your grappling essentials, whether it's finger tape, bombs, mouth guards. It could be a Sisu mouth guard or a whole bunch of other types of stuff that you need for your ground game.
If you're a grappler, if you know a grappler, you're basically going to want to go get them a Grappler's Toolbox. It has everything you need to be a grappler.
And don't just subscribe for 1 month. Subscribe for a 3 or a 6 month package. They've got them all there and a little bit of discount if you do that. And you can even get an even bigger discount if you enter the code MANIFESTO at the front, or at the checkout counter, rather.
Do it, people. So this is the free agent update for the week, Gumby. On Friday, Scott Coker went on Inside MMA, the Boss Rutan show, and revealed that he had signed a prospect, or not a prospect, he had signed a free agent. I got very nervous because I thought it might be Aljamain Sterling.
Yeah, and I want to see him in the UFC still.
Me too. We talked about it in episode 4. I said he was the must re-sign. That being said, the name announced was the Crippler Chris Lieben.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm a big fan of Chris Lieben, and I think that this is a great fit for him. You know, so I wanted to see him back. When I heard all this talk about him releasing a book, he's back to seriously training, he's clean, you know, he got out of prison. All of that's good news to me because I was always a big fan of his. And now hearing that he's all clean and he was getting ready, serious training, I'm glad to see him back. But I'm also glad to see him, I think, not in the UFC. I think Bellator is a better fit for
him. He's like the prototypical Bellator fighter.
Yeah, I mean, he slugs.
He's a brawler.
There's
he's
some
a
fun
name.
Matchups there. And I kind of hope they do the whole Paul Daly thing with him. You know, they feed a couple of younger guys or some not-so-good guys to him, let him get a win or two under his belt, and then start to talk about, you know, the Melvin Manoffs of the division that he could fight. And then start to have some fun with it. But, it's going to be fun to see him again, and I'm happy to see him back in MMA.
1 week after our big free agent talk, Gumby, do you have anything else that you feel, you've heard, you thought about where we land with Overeem and Aljamain? Those are kind of the big two remaining ones that have not been re-signed by the UFC.
I mean, I'm not really hearing anything about Overeem. You know, Overeem is, he's historically a closed book. You don't hear anything from him until you hear from him. The thing that I will say in all of that, though, is I think that, and you actually made this point to me when we were talking off air, is that Aljamain Sterling has been at a lot of UFC fights.
Yeah, he was at UFC Boston in the crowd tweeting. He was at UFC Newark in the crowd.
And you would have to assume, I mean, some of that's because it's East Coast and he's an East Coast
guy.
He
flew out to Vegas this past Saturday, though, too.
That's true. So you have to assume he's talking to somebody at this point in time. They're getting chummier. And you also pointed out that he's a Sarah guy, and Sarah's hanging out with Dana White and looking for a fight every week or every month. You got to assume Matt Sarah, and I think you said this to me, you got to assume Matt Sarah looked at Dana and said, stop fucking around. Just sign
this
kid.
Aljamain Sterling. He's a great prospect. And that's what I was saying, because here's the thing I was thinking is the beginning of the Condit Lawler pay-per-view started with an in memorandum to Matt Serra's mother. And, you know, that's really nice of them to do, but it just goes to show you, I mean, other UFC fighters have lost loved ones before, and they don't start pay-per-views with an in memorandum to a loved one. Matt Serra and Dana White, the point being, is Matt Serra and Dana White are very close.
Yeah, they're chummy. He's a UFC guy. Longo's a UFC guy.
Weidman came out of that camp. He's a former champion.
It's a UFC camp for the most part. I mean, don't get me wrong. They probably have guys at all other promotions. But you would imagine that this is just a dollar figure talk at this point in time. In a matter of time, you'll see Sterling agree on a dollar amount. They'll get him a number one contender's fight, and we'll be in business.
It's what's best for his career. We will keep you guys updated as the weeks go along. We are Aljamain Sterling's biggest fans, and we want to see the UFC re-sign him.
Absolutely.
All right, and now we will transition to Gumby catching up with Chaz Skelly, surging on a 4-fight win streak. He is out of current Team Takedown, Johnny Hendricks' former camp. And this interview is brought to you by Sisu Mouthguards.
Sisu Mouthguards, the most breathable, lightweight mouthguard on the market.
Breathable, lightweight.
Go to SISUGuard.com. these things are pretty much as good as you can get. They've got them for all kinds of different sports, too. So if you're not a jiu-jitsu person, you can get them for any sport out there. We use them for jiu-jitsu. We're heading to the open mats in just a second. Both of us are going to pop them in, make sure we protect not only our teeth, stop ourselves from concussions and whatnot.
Concussions, breaking a tooth, they basically protect you from everything under the sun when you are playing contact sports. So, with that being said, Sisu Mouthguards brings you our interview with Chaz Skelly.
This is Daniel Gumby Vreeland here with Top Turtle MMA and Chaz Skelly, who fights on March 5th at UFC 197 against Darren Elkin. So, we'll kick right into it here, Chaz. You're on a 4-fight win streak, which is really, really impressive, especially in the featherweight division. But I took a peek at the UFC rankings this morning, and they still have you unranked as a featherweight. Do you feel like people are underestimating you and maybe overlooking you a little bit?
You know, I don't really pay attention to that too much, to be honest with you, the rankings and all that. I don't. It's not that important to me. What's important to me is just winning the fights that are in front of me. And I mean, obviously, you wanna get ranked so you get those better opponents, and that's what I'm looking for. But I don't think people are overlooking me. No, I think that there's a lot of good competition at 145. I think there's a couple guys up in the rankings at 145 that probably should be cleared out of there. And then once that happens, then you know, I'm sure I'll have my ranking spot.
Well, you got your first chance on March 5th. Darren Elkins is up in the rankings. He's all the way up at number 11, even though he's 3-3 in his last six fights. Does him being that, like, higher-up name and a chance to, like, vault yourself into that rankings, does that give you any extra motivation in this fight?
Yeah, it does. It does because of the fact that I feel like, you know, I win this fight, and then I win a couple more, and I'll be right up there, you know, competing for a title. I think every fight that I fight brings me closer, you know, every win brings me closer. So that's pretty much all the motivation I need. I don't know if him being actually ranked 11 gives me more motivation or just the fact that I'm going to get to fight, get another win, keep my streak going and become that much closer to getting a title. And that's the overall goal. You know, I'm here to make money and win title. If I wasn't, then I wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, and you said that you only feel like you need a couple more. You know, your win streak already at 4, certainly with a win over Elkins and making it 5. You know, a 6 or 7 fight win streak has got to put you in the mix for the title. Do you have your eyes on people in front of him or just solely focused on this fight?
You know, I'm 100% focused on this fight. I don't think it's a good idea to look ahead and try and figure out matchups of who you could potentially fight next. You know, this is a sport where anything can happen. I could go out and I could knock him out in 10 seconds, or I could go out and get knocked out in 10 seconds, you know, and I think looking too far into the future gets people in trouble in this sport. So I just kind of try and stay grounded into the fight that I'm in and go out there and win. And then after that win, then, you know, I'll start looking at future opponents. I mean, I texted Sean Shelby the day after my last fight and said, you know, I'm looking to get somebody who's up there, a little bit of a bigger name. So, and he actually threw out Darren Elkins' name at that point. I said, yeah, that, you know, anybody's fine, but I like that. I like that matchup.
Well, it's good that they're certainly listening to you because the fight fans certainly want to see you up a little bit higher. So speaking of Elkins again, he really poses a different style than most of the opponents that you've faced since you've gotten into the UFC. You know, he shoots about, on average, about 10 takedowns a fight, which is certainly not a style you've seen. Is there anything you're doing it differently to get ready for that style of a fighter?
No, I think realistically that plays right into my style just perfect. You know, we're both wrestlers. I do believe I'm a much better wrestler than he is. I have let my wrestling slip a little bit my first fight coming into the UFC because I was just working for those. My striking, looking for those knockouts and things of that nature. I fixed that mistake, and I do believe that I'm a better wrestler. And another thing about me is that I'm a funky counter wrestler too. So I think that the way that he shoots, the shots that he takes, I've already broke down his film. I don't think I'm going to have a problem stopping his takedowns, and I don't think I'm going to have a problem beating him up. So, you know, it's going to be a fun one though. He's a super tough guy, and I think that the pressure that he puts on people is what, you know, gets people. So his shots aren't pretty. His striking's not pretty. He doesn't really look for too many submissions on the ground, but he just keeps that relentless pressure. So, you know, that's fine with me. I like that.
And it certainly makes for fun to watch. So you mentioned your first fight, and I felt like gave me a chance to go back to that a little bit. Do you feel like a second fight with Mirsad Bektik would go a different way now that you're getting back to your roots?
Absolutely. I have no doubt in my mind that a second fight with Bektik would go much differently. But he is a great fighter, though. I can't take anything from him. The guy's, you know, he's phenomenal. So, I mean, he trains hard, and I'm sure that he's developing more and more every single day as well. So, you know, by the time that we fight again, we will both be two completely different fighters than the first time you saw us fight. So, yeah, I mean, I'd have to believe it would go differently. I'd have to believe I'd get the win, obviously.
Yeah, and with the path you're going on, it certainly is a possibility in the future. There's only so many guys at the top of the division, and with you two winning, it could be a matter of time. Switching over a little bit to your training, which we talked about a second ago, we had your teammate Jared Rochalt from Team Takedown on a couple of weeks ago, and he was cross-training at Grudge Training Camp. Have you been doing any training outside of your Team Takedown camp?
Yeah, I went for 2 weeks out there last couple of weeks and trained at Grudge. It was fun. It was a good experience, you know, get up there in the elevation and stuff. I plan on doing that on a regular basis. So, and you know, maybe even during this camp, I'm thinking about potentially going back up there for a few weeks and just getting in that elevation and getting my mind right.
Makes a lot of sense. So, is part of the reason you're going up there too, like Jared said, it's hard to find really good training partners all the time. Is part of it looking for more training partners, or is it just like a friendly place to mix it up a bit?
That's probably the biggest part of it for me, is getting up there and getting to go with different guys, getting different looks and different training partners, because I don't have a lot of guys around here. So, you gotta go where the partners are. You know, we have great coaching, you know, great facilities and things of that nature, but we are lacking in the partner department. So if there's not people coming through the gym, you know, flying down and working out with us, and there's not a lot of people to train with. And I feel like that's important. That's a very important factor in my career coming up. I mean, I've gotten away with it so far, but I feel like I really, really need guys to go with.
And that makes a lot of sense. So with him being a little bit closer in weight to you than he was to Jared, not to kind of poke at a sore subject, but is the departure of Johnny Hendricks kind of some of the reason for that hole now?
The reason for what? Excuse
me? For the gap in training partners.
No. I don't believe so. You know, Johnny and I never really, we didn't really go together that much anyways, so.
You didn't train very much with Johnny Hendricks?
Not really, no. I mean, some, a little bit, but not a ton. I mean, we were there at the workouts together, but we didn't really go together much. And, you know, as far as that's concerned, I mean, I think that the only time different partners were in there because of Johnny were the people that they just flew in for his camp. So, and I didn't really, you know, I'd go with some of those guys.
But it doesn't sometimes really affect you on the large scale.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, that makes sense. So we're getting right close to the end of our interview here. I want to give you one more chance to, like, refocus this on your fight, obviously. If you had to draw a picture of what's going to happen at UFC 197 versus Darren Elkins, what would your prediction be?
If I had to draw a picture, like if I had an etch and sketch in front of me and I drew out a picture, I'd probably be holding his head in my hand, crowd cheering. No, I think, honestly, the picture that I keep imagining in my head is me going out there and stuffing his takedowns and basically controlling where the fight takes place. So if I want it on the ground, I put it on the ground. If I want to stand, I keep it standing and I get the knockout.
All right. Well, you heard it here from the horse's mouth, Chad Skelly. Chaz, before we let you go, would you like to plug your sponsors real quick or say hi to anybody out there?
No, I mean, just
you know, all the guys that come out and train with me, thanks, guys. And everybody up at Grudge for having me up there. That was awesome. Good experience. So, you know, my family and friends, everybody supported me for so long. It's nice to have so much support. So thank you, guys.
Thank you very much for coming on, Chaz. We really appreciate it. And good luck in your fight.
Thank you.
So there you have it, Gumby. Chaz Skelly off a 4-fight win streak. You got to interview him. He's fighting Darren Elkins next on March 5th. What was your takeaway from it?
I like that he was going to Joe Silva and asking for that higher-end fight. Because, you know, to have a 4-fight win streak and to still not be getting somebody ranked and to still not be ranked, it's got to be frustrating for him. You know, also a little takeaway there from the whole team takedown thing that we talked about before, not really having Johnny Hendricks as a training partner, not just this time, but even before, is interesting. He says, you know, he trains at the same gym sometimes, but they never had trained together all that much. Just, again, seems a little bit weird with so many limited partners there.
One thing we didn't get a chance to talk about earlier, Gumby, was the two flyweight fights from Saturday. You had Joseph Benavidez beating
Zach Mikofsky.
Mikofsky had some nice takedowns there. It was a game fight, you know, but yeah. Benavidez...
Mikofsky definitely showed that he belongs in the top 5 to 10.
Yes, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And then the upset of the night, if you call it that, because I'm not sure what it was in Vegas.
It was like plus 220 for Scoggins.
Okay, yeah, Justin Scoggins beat Ray Borg. And pretty impressive fashion, too.
I mean, he just looked so sharp in every way. The one time Borg got him down, he reversed him and was on top of him.
Yeah.
I mean... not what I expected at all.
It was kind of a little coming out party for Scoggins because he's on now a 3-fight win streak, I think, but he had two losses in a row at one point.
Yeah,
to high level talent. I think he lost to Dustin Ortiz.
Yep, and I will say too, I'm pretty sure he took at least one of those on short notice. You know, UFC jitters. You want to call it whatever you want. I mean, he lost a couple of times early in his UFC career, but he is definitely very intriguing as a Mighty Mouse prospect to me.
As someone who could potentially face Mighty Mouse?
Yeah, and I'm not saying right now, because he was unranked going into that fight. He beat number 11. You don't give that guy the title shot, because he didn't even finish him. But he definitely is, like, intriguing as somebody who could, because he's got a weird style. It's something Mighty Mouse hasn't seen. His grappling looks pretty sound, because he, you know, dealt with Borg's ground game. So... I'm excited for him.
Yeah, I mean, take note, and if you don't know who he is, he has his name tattooed on his back, so you can't miss him. But he's 4-2 in the UFC. He had two losses in a row to Dustin Ortiz and John Moraga. And for a young fighter, I mean, hey, those are two pretty good guys to lose to.
The Moraga won a split, or was that when Moraga came back?
Moraga actually had a guillotine choke in that one.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure Scoggins was winning that fight, too.
And Dustin Ortiz was a split decision.
Yeah, so early fights... completely normal to lose some like early fights to two high-level talents. I mean, Moraga fought for the title. Ortiz is pretty sound. You know, he's got a couple of matchups away. Maybe we see him at a title shot before the end of the year, and he said that in the post-fight interview. Speaking of post-fight interviews, I just got to switch it around to our other flyweight matchup. You had to feel for Joseph Benavidez, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just painful. He gets to his post-fight interview. He says, you know, I know they haven't done the booking yet, but Henry Cejudo does not deserve the title shot. And 5 minutes before his fight happened, they announced Henry Cejudo was getting the title shot.
Tough.
It's painful. I was, like, watching that interview, and I was, like, literally cringing on my couch. Like, oh, dude, why? Oh, somebody should have told him.
Yeah, that almost was like a knife in the back moment that they actually – I mean, I get it. They announced the flyweight title fight before the biggest flyweight fight on the card, but they had – I just can't believe no one told him that.
Even the guy – was it Anik interviewing him?
I believe so.
Why didn't Anik say something? You know,
like, it's tough.
Turn to him and be like,
tough.
Oh, I'm sorry, Joe, but actually they just announced this.
You know, by the end of the post-fight press conference, he kind of came around to it. He laid his claim. He said him and Cejudo were supposed to fight. It didn't happen. He feels like Cejudo hasn't fought a bunch of top-level talent. And just to kind of set the card for everyone, or set the stage, you know, Benavidez has lost to Demetrius Johnson twice. And the way I look at it, if I'm him, and I think he came around to it by the end, he should be rooting for Cejudo, actually, because he's not going to get a third crack at Demetrius Johnson short of
the third the third crack when you've lost two is so rare.
Yeah. And that, look at Misha Tate. Misha Tate was so bummed out when they gave Holly that fight after promising her the next title fight against Ronda. Then they give Holly the fight. Greatest thing that ever happened to Misha Tate. Now she can fight Holly for the title. They didn't want to give Misha Tate to Ronda a third time.
No.
And they don't want to give Benavidez to Demetrius Johnson a third time.
Because not for anything either, but he didn't show anything in those fights, too, that would make me think it was going to end any other way.
Right. So it is what it is. So what's your take overall on the flyweight division? You know, it was a division starved for title contenders maybe a couple months ago, but you feeling a little different now?
I think it's really exciting because, you know, Cejudo, finally that challenger that brings a little bit different of a style. He's like a Olympic-level wrestler. You know, and he's Mighty Mouse has faced wrestlers before, but not an Olympic-level wrestler. Then you got Wilson Hayes, who just out-wrestled Dustin Ortiz in very impressive fashion. You got Justin Scoggins. Benavidez is up there near the top still. There are a lot of fun guys, and I think you know, correct me if I'm wrong, I think I heard rumblings of a Koji Horiguchi comeback, too. So he'll be back in the mix at some point in time, too. He's a fun guy to watch.
There's also Ian McCall's always around the top five. I don't even know if he still fights anymore.
Yeah,
he's been, like, on a long layoff.
Yeah, he's been on a long layoff. I think he's doing some stuff with a gym.
I think he's doing some stuff with a marijuana dispensary.
Yeah, I did hear that as well. Yep, he's making money that way. But regardless, lots of fun new talent towards the top of that division,
yeah.
And it badly needed it.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, that being said, that about wraps up Episode 5. We will be back next week with a preview of Fight Night 83, Cowboy versus Cowboy. It's like Brokeback Mountain Part 2. Not really, that's an awful joke. But we will be back next week with a preview of that and some fun interviews. And you got anything else for us, Gumby?
Nope, just make sure you head over to MMA Manifesto. That's MMA-Manifesto.com and check out all the fun content there. You can follow me at Gumby Vreeland on Twitter.
You can follow the show at Top Turtle MMA on Twitter. And you can download us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud. Leave us a comment if you like what we're putting down.
Yeah, definitely hit the comment boards up. We'd love to hear some feedback. And you can get the email, too.
TopTurtleMMA@gmail.com if you want to contact us personally. All right. When you get to the top turtle position in MMA, you should always be looking to finish. We are Top Turtle. We are finished.